Okay, Clerk Strickler, I have 6:30. Are you ready?
Ready, thank you.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and call a special meeting of the Bethel City Council to order. It's March 30th at 6:30 p.m. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag,
of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Roll call, Clerk Strickler, please.
Thank you, Councilmember Leary.
Present.
Councilmember Springer.
Here.
Councilmember Henderson.
Here.
Councilmember McCormick.
Present.
Vice Mayor Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Barr. Mayor DeWitt.
I'm here. Thank you.
I've not heard from Councilmember Barr, Mayor DeWitt.
Okay. Thank you for that. The next item on our agenda is people to be heard. Folks will have 5 minutes per person to speak. And my understanding is so far we have two people who have indicated that they wish to speak. And our first person on the list tonight is Ruth Abigail Miller. If you would please state and spell your name for the record, and then you'll have up to 5 minutes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My name is Ruth Abigail Miller, R-U-T-H-A-B-I-G-A-I-L-M-I-L-L-E-R. Before I address the matter at hand, I'd like to say again that I'm proud to know Juanita Nick and stand with her. I'm honored to be associated with her, and she's one of the strongest women I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. She's a survivor. So I'm back here again tonight, not so much to address City Council. I think you guys have made it pretty clear who will speak up, stand up, and show up, I guess, apparently, and who's content on sitting down and avoiding blowback from the good old boys on this matter. So I look forward to listening to your discussion of Agenda Item 7.1. To quote my favorite musical, history has its eyes on you. I'm here today to address the public listening. Last I spoke here, I addressed a lot of things to Pete Williams, our interim city manager. The thing I took the greatest issue with was his report to KYUK that the reason Juanita Nick's rape investigation, specifically the rape kit, was mishandled is because the Bethel Police Department was unable to contact the medical branch of the sexual assault response team at the time. But fear not, citizens of Bethel. Mr. Williams has assured us that they have all exchanged phone numbers this very month and it won't happen again. Everybody listening knows this is an excuse. Everybody listening knows this is a lie. It is a fact that the only ER in town is open 24/7 and their number is in the phone book and on the internet. Plus, this noob chief of police has been here since summerish of 2020, and he's just now thinking to exchange information with the people who collect evidence for his department, GTFO, as the kids say. I'd like to believe that our city manager was just repeating a lie that was told to him by someone in the police department. I really like Mr. Williams, and the thought of him knowingly participating in minimizing such a serious issue breaks my heart and has kept me up at night. Our city manager lied to KYUK. Why do I feel so emboldened to call someone a liar? Because I verified this information with an information request from the city of Bethel. On October 9th, 2020, the chief of police received an email with an alternate phone number to call other than the readily available on-call number due to a worker being ill. Not that it matters, because he had the number and certainly internet access prior to October 9th, 2020. But it's concrete proof that he most certainly knew how to contact somebody from the medical branch of SART prior to them doing their phone number exchange this month. I think it's really important for everyone who is listening to know that you have a right to read emails that city employees and city council receive and send. You have a right to review their call logs. You have a right to review their text messages and more. That 6.5% sales tax you pay at the stores in town says these guys work for you, and you have a legal right to inspect their work and come to city council and demand accountability. Bethel Police Department employees are city employees. You can go to cityofbethel.org and fill out an information request online. The Bethel Municipal Code states that city records are public property. I'd like to read from the Bethel Municipal Code to give everyone listening an idea of the types of information that they can request. BMC 2.40.010B, definition of city record is any book, paper, file, account, writing, including drafts and memorializations of conversations, and other items, regardless of the format or physical characteristics, that are developed or received by a city agency or by a private contractor for a city agency, and that are preserved for their informational value or as evidence of the organization or operation of the city agency. BMC does allow for redactions for things like medical files, ongoing police investigations, advisements from the city attorney, et cetera. They're pretty standard, it's what you would expect. So I'm asking everybody who's listening, if you think something is up, put in an information request about the subject matter you've got a hunch about. Thank you, citizens of Bethel, Alaska, for listening. That is all.
Thank you for joining us this evening, and thank you for your testimony. And I do want to acknowledge for the record that I see Councilmember Barr has joined the meeting. The next person—
Then I retract my snarky remark about not showing up.
The next person on our list to speak under People to be Heard is Victoria Sosa. If you could please state and spell your name for the record, and you will have up to 5 minutes for your testimony. Thank you for joining us this evening. And if you've joined us by phone, it's possible you might need to press *6 to unmute yourself. Nope, almost. *6. There you go.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. And you can now state and spell your name for the record, and you will have up to 5 minutes. Thank you.
My name is Victoria Sosa, B-I-C-T-O-R-I-A, Sosa, S-O-S-A. I come before you today as a concerned citizen of Bethel. Still, I want to talk about how the Bethel City Council and the Bethel Police Department is in fact accountable for handling the rape of rape cases and the mishandling of Juanita Nix's rape case. I also want to talk about the behavior of our city council members, specifically Mark Springer and Pete Williams. Mark, you said that Bethel City Council and its Public Safety Commission actually don't have much purview, meaning you don't have oversight or authority to demand the police to follow their policies and procedures, which to me is very concerning. Your job as a council member is to have purview over the city government, and it's your job and its employees. I'd like to hope you do in fact have very much concern about the police department that is actually within your purview as an elected official. You should have concern with items brought before council as you are a Bethel City Council member. You took an oath. Pete, Mr. Williams, you said that the cause of Juanita Nix's rape kit collecting dust was, quote, lack of communication, unquote. You are flat out lying. You were lied to, or are you lying to save yourself to look good on behalf of this council? Are you lying on behalf of someone else? Are you lying because you don't care? I'd like to believe that you do care. And if you do, then please go ahead and publicly apologize to Juanita Nix for the neglect of the case and the way that you dismissed the mishandling by lying to a media outlet. Be accountable. Hold yourself accountable. Hold the person who gave you the bad information accountable. I want to hear an apology. Also, is our community's other concerns that are brought before you taken seriously? Or are you simply going to tell me that over the course of your employment with the City of Bethel, there was a, quote, lack of communication, unquote? Every time there is a failure in one of your departments, I demand better. I demand justice. I demand justice for Juanita Nick. And I demand the council members to apologize to Juanita Nick for the falsehoods reported to KYUK. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for joining us this evening. And thanks to both of the people who have spoken so far for speaking out on this issue of sexual assault. Has anyone else joined us who would like to speak under people to be heard? Okay, my understanding is that Clerk Strickler has received one written statement to be read this evening. Is that correct, Clerk Strickler?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, I think we are ready for that. Thank you.
Right, so this written statement was actually submitted to the City Clerk's office on March 23rd, following the deadline of our last City Council meeting. The individual requested it be read this evening in advance of this evening's meeting. The submission was made by Randy Yvonne, to whom it may concern. Can you please read this out loud at the City Council meeting tonight? My name is Randy Yvonne, and I live in Bethel. Good evening. Today I read a KYUK article about a community member, Juanita Nick. The article was about her rape, was handled by the BPD, stating it took several hours from anyone from the police department to respond to the victim and to take statements and collect evidence as needed. I find this unprofessional and concerning for all of the Bethel community. It happened once. How many other cases have been handled this way? In the several hours it has taken them to even respond, anything could have happened, from the family being tracked down and murdered to keep them quiet. This should be addressed as a whole for the safety of the people. Another issue I find concerning is that Ms. Nick's rape kit was not picked up in a timely manner. The maximum time allotted to turn a rape kit over to the testing lab is up to 30 days. And I read it to look 4 days after 30 for the police department to even pick it up from the local hospital, meaning it was sitting in a cabinet for over a month. In my opinion, a rape kit should never be left on a shelf that long, especially considering the backlog for testing once it finally arrives to the laboratory. Thirdly, why did it take some of the community members to protest to get anyone to respond in the first place? There are people who are suffering from trauma that would like their cases investigated fairly and turned over to the district attorney's office in a timely manner. This is not a to-do list of errands that are meaningless day-to-day errands. These are lives we should be protecting and prioritizing to show care for them and all victims involved. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Sincerely, Randy Yvonne.
Okay, thank you for that. And I'd like to thank Randy Yvonne for submitting testimony for people to be heard this evening. So thank you for that. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved. This is Councilmember.
Thank you, Councilmember Henderson. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Hansen. Are there any amendments to the agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda, please vote by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. Aye. Okay. The next item on the agenda is unfinished business, and there is no unfinished business this evening. That brings us to item number 7, new business. Item 7.1. This is for council discussion, evaluating and improving the investigation, processing, and prosecution of reported sexual assault cases within the Bethel criminal justice system. This was placed on the agenda by Councilmember McCormick. Is there a motion to move into committee of the whole to allow for open conversation of this issue?
So moved.
Thank you, Councilmember McCormick. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Henderson.
Thank you, Henderson. All those in favor of moving into committee of the whole, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. Okay, we are in committee of the whole. Councilmember McCormick, as the sponsor of this agenda item, would you like to provide the initial discussion and input this evening on this item?
Certainly. Oh, thank you, Mayor DeWitt. So as I'm sure many of you are aware, we've received a number of suggestions from the public, both in council meetings and in other public spaces, a number of suggestions of how we can really tackle this issue. But I think one that really stuck out to me was the prospect of pursuing an investigation to try to see what steps we might be able to take to improve how our community handles sexual assault cases. There's obviously a number of issues, and I really feel that through having an investigation, we could really find where these issues are stemming from. And so I was hoping to hold this discussion tonight to get everyone's feedback and thoughts on that. It's my understanding also that TWC is joined us, and I would hope that they would be able to chime into this discussion as well, to perhaps offer some guidance on what sort of choice we might make there. So that's not all of it, but that's kind of just a start of what I was hoping to accomplish with this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember McCormick. And just so council is aware, we do have a number of guests with us. If we choose to hear from any of those guests this evening, we will need to make a motion to suspend the rules. So just keep that in mind. If there's a process related question or some other kind of question that council might have. And my understanding is we have representatives from YKHC and from Tundra Women's Coalition on the meeting. And Clerk Strickler, do you know of any others, or does that cover it? YKHC and TWC.
I'm checking. I'm sorry. I don't remember off the top of my head. So I wanted just to double check. Some of them aren't the association. Maybe Eileen would be able to better address that. Some of them don't have the associated agency listed in the email. I'm sorry to say.
Okay. I think I've got it covered based on a scan of the who's on the Zoom, and I'm getting a head nod. So anyway, back to Councilmember McCormick's item that he's brought forward for council discussion. I think what we could maybe do is provide some organized commentary on the proposal that Councilmember McCormick has just made in sort of organized fashion, and then open it up for more of an open floor of discussion. So let's see, who would like to speak to this issue first? Maybe let's start with Vice Mayor Hansen.
Let's see, I guess I would say that for me, and how I see this going forward, not that I'm trying to, you know, rock the boat, but I was hoping that maybe we could get some information and maybe a presentation or that from one of our guests who is here. Is that possible?
If you make a motion to suspend the rules.
I'll do it. I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules to hear from some of the subject matter experts who are with us tonight.
Second.
Thank you, Councilmember. Thank you, Vice Mayor Hansen. Second from Councilmember Springer. All those in favor of suspending the rules, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. Okay, Vice Mayor Hansen, could you share a little bit about like what in particular might be helpful for you at this point, and who you might like to hear from the group of representatives from TWC and YKHC?
I guess I was thinking that I'd like to hear, I mean, we've heard a lot about, you know, what the either perceived or actual failure was on the city's part through the police department, through City Manager Williams. And so I'd like to hear what the process is that is in place, if that can be improved, how we can help facilitate that, and if there's what we can do as a council to support either TWC's role in the handling of cases such as these and or YKHC's. So I'm open to either and would love to hear from both organizations and what they have to, you know, tell us about and educate us on.
Okay. City Council did receive a PowerPoint presentation that was forwarded from Eileen Arnold, the Executive Director of Tender Women's Coalition. So maybe we can start with Eileen Arnold of TWC. And it might be helpful for the record if Eileen, if you could state and spell your name for the record and then just perhaps provide some information. And then if you call on other members of the team to provide information, if they could do the same. So thank you.
All right. My name's Eileen Arnold. That's E-I-L-E-E-N. Arnold is A-R-N-O-L-D. And I'm the executive director of the Tender Women's Coalition. I think it's great that the council is calling a special meeting about this. I do think that that's the number one thing that council can be doing right now to be helpful, which is to take the action that you're taking. I would also say that I'm working with City Manager Williams. The multidisciplinary team is working with City Manager Williams to do a town hall, which will be further education for the community about what systems we already have in place and basic referrals and things like that. The presentation that I put together is just very basic, the system that our partnering agencies have in place. So should I share my screen or will Lori share the document? I can run through it. This won't take very long. It's just the basic skeletal structure of what system we have in place.
Quick Strickler, which would you prefer?
I think that Eileen should have screen sharing options. That might be the easiest.
Okay, give me one slide. Oops. All right. Can everybody see this okay? All right. Okay, so I'm just giving the very basic on what our YK Delta regional multidisciplinary victim services teams look like. And I'll take this moment to also remind everybody that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So multidisciplinary teams, we call them MDTs. They're also often called SARTs, Sexual Assault Response Teams. MDTs partner together to provide interagency coordinated responses that make victims and survivors' needs a priority, hold offenders accountable, and promote public safety. That's what they're designed to do. This SART model is standard and best practices according to National Victim Services, National Sexual Violence Response Services. Bethel and the YK Delta have had an MDT response for adults for almost 25 years and also a response for children for almost 20 years. In listening to the prior city council meeting that addressed this, I figured it would probably be a good idea to give information on both multidisciplinary teams just for everybody's education. So our adult team, we generally call it the SART team. The team members include the Tender Women's Coalition, the Alaska State Troopers, Bethel Police Department, YKHC Medical Team, the Children's Advocacy, which is a program underneath our umbrella, and the local district attorney's office. The adult team, we have written protocols, and they're currently under review because we're expanding into several villages. So we're rewriting them to update with, to be, you know, current with Alaska state statute, but then also to have written protocols for our expansion into villages. Because as it stands right now, everybody has to come to Bethel. Like people in Bethel, obviously the response happens in Bethel, but also people in all the villages have to come to Bethel if you are reporting a sexual assault. This adult team responds mostly to adult cases of sexual assault, but also sometimes strangulation and serious physical violence. So anything that calls for evidence collection, forensics collection. This team, the adult team, responds to adults who are 18 years of age and older. The team, we generally meet once a month for updates, to do case review, and also other team business, like currently rewriting the protocols. We also have a separate child response. And we generally refer to this as the CAC MDT, the Children's Advocacy Center MDT. So the team members are, first of all of the adult SART team members, so TWC, AST, BPD, YKHC Medical, CAC, and the local district attorneys. And then additionally on that team, we have the local Attorney General's Office, local Office of Children's Services, local Department of Juvenile Justice, Bethel Family Clinic, who provides behavioral health for referrals, and also YK Behavioral Health are all signed members on that MDT. The CAC also has written and signed protocols that have received national accreditation. They're reviewed every 5 years. This team responds mostly to child cases of sexual assault, but also child physical abuse, neglect, and when children are witnesses to violence. This team responds to children under the age of 18, but also adults with developmental disabilities. This team meets separately from the adult SART team once a month for case review and case updates, and then also the core team will meet once every 3 months. So as I said in the very beginning, like, the MDTs exist to try to have a least traumatic process for a survivor to go through when they choose to report sexual assault. But I also think it's important to make sure people know what their options are. When you are an adult, you do have an option, first of all, to not report. A person who might not want to report but is concerned with their personal safety and health can still have access to medical and advocacy services. You know, you can still be seen at the hospital. You can still call TWC for referrals. You don't have to report to law enforcement if you don't want to. There's also an option called anonymous victim report. And this is when perhaps a person isn't sure if they want to report to law enforcement, but evidence can still be collected by the same team at the hospital, and advocacy can still respond. That evidence is saved. And if a survivor later chooses to report, like within 25 years, then that there's still what we call the SART kit, you know. And then of course there's the report to law enforcement, which is the scenario where law enforcement where somebody reports to law enforcement, either Bethel Police Department or Alaska State Troopers. Law enforcement initiates the SART call out. And so then law enforcement, medical, and advocacy will all respond together at the hospital. Is best practices. That is so that a person only needs to tell their story once. Everybody is present in the room at that time, law enforcement who's asking the questions, a forensics nurse who is listening and also preparing to collect evidence if a person wants that and take pictures. And then also one of our advocates who I think the next slide is common referrals. So typically when people are sexually assaulted, some of the things that they might need and that we can offer are things like shelter, obviously, also a sexual assault protective order, court accompaniment and case tracking, because sometimes people want to follow their cases and sometimes they want somebody else to follow them and give them updates. And then also behavioral health referrals. Bethel Family Clinic, YKHC Behavioral Health, TWC has a counselor. We also recommend non-traditional Western behavioral health services as well, because obviously people need different things. We also do a lot of applications for Violent Crimes Compensation Board, where if you have property damage or you have any costs associated with being the victim of a violent crime, you can get cash reimbursement for whatever you might need. So that is just the very basic of the, I wanted to make sure people knew what structure we already have in place. Because it is a structure that's been around for a while. It's a structure that's always improving. Especially depending on transition and turnover, which we all have, funding sometimes, and then, you know, just in general, how things rise and fall. I appreciate the community's attentiveness to this issue. People on our MDT take this seriously, and but it takes an entire community. You know, it's not just the members of the MDT who are going to have an impact on what sexual assault looks like in our community or how it impacts our community. I do think everybody needs to be concerned about it. So I'm grateful to the city council members for holding this special meeting. I'm grateful to everybody who has spoken at People to be Heard. This multidisciplinary team, we consider ourselves accountable to the community. And as I said, we are always improving. None of us believe in perfection. But that said, I think we have a pretty strong team that's even expanding into the villages, which I think is a success of the team. So that's sort of the bare minimum of the structure that we have in place. Are there any questions or comments about that?
Madam Mayor.
Yes, Council Member Springer.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Eileen. No, that was real informative. So from your perspective, either TWC or the multidisciplinary team, what are the current monthly sexual assault statistics in Bethel? Also, can you address reports that get as far as SART versus referrals to the district attorney's office?
I wish I could answer that question on referrals to the district attorney. It would be hard to have a snapshot of that in for 1 month. I could say off the top of my head, I think in 1 month, maybe, and Jen, you can speak, Jen or Farah, you can correct me. I would say we're probably responding to 3 to 5 adult cases of sexual assault reported. There's certainly a lot more going on that are perhaps that show up at the ER that adults choose not to respond. I would double that number. So I would say, let's say 3 to 5 reported, maybe 8 to 10 altogether, perhaps. But investigations, I'm not sure what the average investigation takes. Like with the troopers, for instance, they're 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I think it takes more than like a month sometimes to close investigations. So like the ones that happen in like month January are not going to be referred to the district attorney in general, I would say. I shouldn't speak for the district attorney, but they're not going to be referred within the same month. Investigations often don't close that quickly just because of how many cases are presented every month. And actually that was just adults. If we add children, I'd say we double that number, right, Jen? Okay.
Eileen, now might be a good chance. I just recognize that, you know, not everybody at our council meeting this evening may be used to hearing this information and sort of from a, you know, if you could maybe share a little bit about what resources, if anybody's hearing this conversation and this conversation is bringing up issues for people, where they might go to get a bit of support if needed.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. So there's a lot of support, I think, that people aren't necessarily aware of. Like you have your common ones that people, there's YK Behavioral Health. And just listening, I was talking to Dinetta Morris the other day on one of our MDT meetings. And I think they don't, I don't think they have a wait list, or if there is one, it's pretty small. So a person could get a referral to YKHC Behavioral Health. Also TWC, we have a contracted clinician and she doesn't need to do assessments. She's we try to make it very easy for people to talk to her. So somebody could call TWC and ask to speak to our counselor. She's contracted, so she really only is with us 2 days out of the week, but she's been with us for like 20 years. Really excellent, deep knowledge of the issues and the community. Bethel Family Clinic also has a good behavioral health team at this point. And then also VCCB, the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, which I referred to as a common referral. If somebody wanted a counselor, perhaps that wasn't in Bethel, just because this is a small community and wanted like a private counselor, but perhaps didn't have insurance or whatever, you could apply to VCCB and TWC can assist with those applications. In fact, I think you do need a referral from the local victim services agency to complete the VCCB application. You can, though the fee for like a private counselor could be reimbursed by VCCB. And then of course we recommend for everybody, like make sure that you have your support system. Do you have somebody that you can talk to? There's a lot of, in the proclamation that the city made for recognizing April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, there was a number of referrals that we put in there, including an Indigenous helpline that you can call for just a talk. There's also a lot of good like breathing exercises that we have resources for people who maybe aren't ready to talk or don't like the counselor methodology. Obviously people engaging in just healthy activities in general, where like dancing, like being outside, like engaging in subsistence activities, things that like lead to a lot of like fresh air and sunshine and exercise. Like that's neurologically very healthy. But then also taking action, like that's honestly a part of healing as well. It's, you know, what we call empowerment, which is one of the values that TWC structures our agency off of.
Okay, thank you for that, Eileen. More questions for Eileen.
Hey, Eileen. Real quick, I've never heard of the VCCB before. Could you just tell me what that, or for anyone listening, what that acronym stands for?
Sure. A lot of people don't know what it is. VCCB stands for Violent Crimes Compensation Board, and this is a national thing. When people pay fees to court for, you know, whatever, it gets put into a fund. And each state has got a different fund that is managed by a volunteer board. The state of Alaska, I think it's a 3-person board, and they only meet 3 times a year. So that's one sort of problem about VCCB. Like you can apply, but you might have to wait. And also they do a lot of reimbursement, not necessarily fronting money, but that's also something that TWC could help with. We've been in that situation a lot. And if somebody had like an emergency need, we could probably figure it out. So, but anyway, VCCB just exists to give cash benefits to people who have been impacted by a violent crime. So let's say you had to give your clothes to a SANE nurse to be collected as evidence. That can be reimbursed. Let's say your home was damaged from somebody breaking in to commit a violent crime. You can get your home repaired. They don't replace cell phones. But not just sexual assault or domestic violence, but people who have to pay like funeral fees or home cleaning fees if a violent crime occurs there, even relocation fees. I actually have an excellent PowerPoint presentation that was made by the Alaska VCCB that I think is extremely informative. And it also breaks down like where in Alaska people are applying from and how much has been paid out to the state of Alaska. I think it's a very useful resource that I do find most people don't know about. And I do think more people should know about it. Because it just exists to assist people whose lives have been fiscally impacted, financially impacted by violent crimes. And it's on the State of Alaska website, VCCB.
Thank you.
More questions for Eileen this evening?
Madam Mayor, just one more.
Yeah. Please, Council Member Springer.
Sure. Eileen, you said that. Yeah, thanks. Eileen, you said the response initiated by law enforcement. Can it be initiated by by an individual presenting at the ER and saying I was sexually assaulted, and then what happens? You know, what happens there? They have to call the PD.
Right. Okay. I think I heard most of that. I think you're asking about who initiates SART. So this is a very messy thing. And because adults have choices, it can go all over the place. I think So sometimes people will call TWC, they'll call our crisis line and say, I've been sexually assaulted. And we'll try to tell them their options. Like, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to hear your options? Do you want to report to law enforcement? Do you want to do an anonymous report? If you do want to report to law enforcement, then you need to call law enforcement. Once law enforcement is called, they initiate the SART process, which means they are alerting TWC that we're going to have a response. They're alerting the ER that we're going to have a response. And we're getting an advocate, and YKHC is getting a nurse ready to respond. Somebody could go to the ER, though, like if they don't know to, you know, if they don't know what happened or if they're trauma impacted, they might show up at the ER and say, I've been sexually assaulted. But of course, Jen and Farah are training their team, which is expansive. Like YK's never had such a large SANE team, that's sexual assault nurse examiner. They would at that point say, okay, if you're reporting a sexual assault, then you need to call the police. Like that's if a person wants to call and report. Again, there are options that people have a right to know about, and we're always trying to educate people, but it just depends on what a community member knows and what that first point of report might be.
Okay, thank you.
More questions for Eileen or anyone from YKHC?
Madam Mayor, this is Councilmember Henderson.
Yes, Councilmember Henderson.
First, I'd like to say thank you for that presentation. That was very informative. We might think we know a lot until we do get a presentation, and it's always wonderful to learn something more and add to that bank of knowledge that we have. I do have a question about your meetings that you have once a month. I see you have BPD listed on for those meetings. Has BPD been represented at the meeting? And if not, when was the last time that they were?
Chief Simmons was at the meeting that we had. Was it last week? I think it was last. Right. Okay. Yeah. Chief Simmons was at the meeting that we had last week. Sometimes members send like somebody else. Like attendance is not always 100% on all of these things. Also, depending on what we might be responding to, because as team members, you know, a SART might be happening right when the meeting is supposed to be happening. So, and I wouldn't say that we do 12 meetings a year either. There are times where we just cancel them because nobody's able to attend, like because trials have just started up again. I think the DA didn't make it on time. By the time we were done with business, he hadn't logged on. But in general, I think our team attendance is pretty good. But remember, we're all crisis response agencies. So I just sort of have a policy of like, it's never going to be 100%. Attendance is never going to be 100%. That's, you know, why we're taking notes, and that's why we communicate with each other to make sure team members know what's going on.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Additional questions?
I have a question, and this could, I'm not sure who the best to answer, but Eileen or two from YK, if any of you have an answer. I don't want to ask specifics, but for example, like it was just explained that you're supposed to report if someone is sexually assaulted or assaulted in any way, they're supposed to report to the law enforcement first. What would you suggest for a victim to do if they're not getting the response from law enforcement, if they're left waiting, let's say, for several hours? Should they hop over to the hospital and initiate in that way? Or, you know, what would you suggest if someone called the crisis line and reports that this is happening, what would be their best course of action?
So what I would say is the best course of action is if you're reporting sexual assault and it's taking a while from any partner, perhaps, I would call another partner. So if you've reported to BPD and for whatever reason, you know, lack of officers all responding to something different, then I would call TWC at that point. Or I don't know about arriving in the ER just because of COVID. I'd probably say that's not a good idea right now. However, if you were to get in touch with advocacy, our advocates would probably communicate to me, and I would communicate to BPD about what is the timeline. Because sometimes there is a timeline. Sometimes we can't respond immediately. And not just BPD, but sometimes we don't have a SANE nurse because of coverage or whatever reason. There was a time years ago where people had to go to Anchorage because we didn't have a full response here, full medical response. So I'm so grateful to YKHC for the team that they've built because it is robust now. But even still, we can't always respond immediately, but we always want to respond as quickly as we possibly can because we know that that's an uncomfortable situation that a survivor is in if they're not getting services immediately. But I would say if you're not getting response from one partner, call another partner because we are connected to each other and we can find out what's going on. Jen, would you want to add anything there?
And if you could introduce yourself. Thank you, Dr. Prince.
Yeah, so I'm Jennifer Prince. I'm actually a pediatrician at YKHC, but I've also really built the SART program up over the last couple of years. So I would echo kind of what Eileen said is, especially during COVID right now, I don't necessarily want to encourage people to respond to the ER. We really would want to, we don't necessarily want them sitting in a waiting room and getting exposed. But if they do reach out to TWC, if they haven't heard, we have on-call phones, TWC has on-call phones, and we're able to communicate with each other as well. So I do think that probably the crisis line would be the best route if you haven't heard from law enforcement yet. And all of our SANEs and all of our, so we have SANEs, we have the sexual assault nurse examiners, and we also have SAFEs, which are providers, which are sexual assault forensic examiners. Everybody is trained in kind of going through the options. And we will speak with people over the phone. If we need to speak with them in person, we'll do that as well. So we do have that available. If we need to talk with them and somebody decides to do an anonymous kit, we'll reach out to DWC and get an advocate available as well. So there is a lot of routes. There's no clean cut algorithm really.
Okay, thank you so much. That was one of my burning questions over the last week or so.
And then this might be a good point, Eileen, for you to talk a little bit about OBR.
I honestly, I don't know that much about Office of Victims of Right. I know you're referring to. I think a person has a right to check up on their case if they think that it's been mishandled. I haven't ever assisted a person through that process. So I don't know what it would actually look like, but that if somebody wanted to do that, then we would certainly be available to learn that process and be in contact and follow through. But actually, I mean, honestly, Mayor DeWitt, if you know a little bit more about OBR from your time at TWC, you could certainly give more information that I might have.
Well, it's a good resource for people who are concerned that they did not receive the team response or an individual partner response that they deserve when they reported a crime. So that is just another resource available for folks when there is a concern that a process wasn't followed. Okay, other questions? I guess I will check in with the folks from YKHC. I know Eileen did most of the presenting. Did either of you have anything you wanted to add before we transition back to council discussion?
I guess I can go through a little bit of the medical process if anybody thinks that would be helpful. as Eileen said, we come together as a group when somebody wants to report. And we meet, YHC has built a beautiful exam room and a beautiful interview room for us. That's right off the ER, but it is still protected and still we're trying to respect privacy as much as possible. We meet as a team in the interview room with the victim and with our support person as well. And we go through the story once. And while we're going through the story, we are collecting a lot of information from the forensic interview to document that, but also to kind of help us guide what evidence to collect. Part of our evidence collection is collecting swabs for DNA. And we want to make sure that we're collecting the correct swabs for the different parts of the body based on the story that we're given. We also do photographs. These are all kept very safe. These are not a part of the YKHC medical record. We keep a separate forensic medical record. And we do provide medical treatment as well. We do STI testing, we do Plan B, we do prophylaxis antibiotics for STIs as well. After the interview, the officer typically leaves and the sane or safe will stay and they'll complete the medical portion of the exam. The advocate will stay during that process and the support person will stay as well. We move into the exam room. We give it the victim the power. We start to give some power back and let them to decide who's in the exam room and who is not. During that time, we do what they want and what they're comfortable with. If they're not comfortable with photos, we don't take photos. If they're not comfortable with an exam, we don't do an exam. We are there to offer them what they want. It also provides a good reassurance. A lot of times people are very worried, what damage has this done to my body? We can always take a look and explain if there's any injuries, what type of healing that looks like. If there's STIs, what that can do and how we can treat that. So that's a big part of it for us as well. Once we finish the exam and we've finished the entire medical side, it's typically the advocate that will help arrange transportation for the victim and her support person as well. After that, we finish processing the kit. This varies. We finish our report our kit is included with underwear that's worn at that time, the swabs from different parts of the body, a copy of the medical report. If we've taken any photos, we will also make a CD of those photos as well. We keep everything in a evidence locker. We have an evidence locker in the hospital. It's in a closet off of the exam room. The keys to both the evidence locker and the keys to the closet off of that exam room are only available to those members that are this part of the SART team. And then from there, there's two additional locked doors. So we're behind four locks. So there's no chance that anybody's going to be able to alter that evidence once we lock it up. The kits are sealed with evidence tape and signed and dated. We also have a form that we fill out that's called our chain of custody form. And we fill out when we put the evidence into the locker and when it's retrieved. We track who puts it in the locker, who retrieves it, and who it's given to as well. So that's kind of our process. And we have somebody that's on call 24 hours a day. All of our providers and all of our nurses have other full-time jobs. We have really been able to build our system so that nobody's working while they're also on call. That hasn't always been the case. And then with COVID this last year, it has been very difficult. We have had times where we've had quarantine or people have been sick. And so October and November were a little bit difficult times, but we've always had somebody answering that phone. At the very least, that phone will always be forwarded to my cell phone. I think it's been very rare over the last year that we haven't had anybody available. I think it was only about a week this year so far, back in October. I also have made my personal cell phone available to all the members of my team, as well as the MDT partners. We also, in addition to having the on-call phones, we have one for the adult team and one for the pediatric team. We also have our system in place for Tiger Text in the hospital. So if somebody were to show up at the ER, we do have a Tiger Text role that whoever is working at the hospital can also reach out to our on-call people as well.
Okay, thank you for that, Dr. Prince. That was a really comprehensive overview. And I do want to also thank everybody you know, at TWC, who's on the call, everybody at YKHC for your 24-hour service to this community and the region in response to people who have experienced sexual violence. So thank you for that. Do council members have any other questions? Okay, and just a reminder, I know we moved into some like...
Mayor DeWitt?
Oh, yes.
I'd like to ask both Eileen and Dr. Prince about if they, you know, I don't know if they fully thought it out yet in this way, but what ways can we support that team, program, process? Is there anything we can do as city council or directing city administration, or like what role can we play?
Well, I would say again, I really appreciate the extra meeting that you're holding right now. I think city council has taken all of this very seriously, and I appreciate this prompt action. Occasionally, I would say there's funding available for multidisciplinary teams like ours that I've never attempted to try to get for our team. But I mean, in the future, it might take a vote from council to sign on to some of that federal money. I've looked at it. I've never gone after it. The reality is funding comes and goes. And that's been one of the things that we've been trying to balance, how to keep funding in order to keep partners at the table. But sometimes that's money that we could direct towards like BPD or AST, or right now we're directing a bunch of money to YKHC so that their team can be as robust as it is. So if there's funding opportunities, please support it. Do what you're doing right now, which is addressing the issue and being accountable. I can't think of anything else. Jen?
I think that training is just very, very important. You know, we were able to get a grant with TWC that has really been able to provide a lot of training for the medical professionals. That has really changed our team significantly. And I have to imagine that it would be helpful for other members as well to be able to go to trainings and be able to receive those trainings and maybe even bring some of those trainings to Bethel directly.